So hello everyone.
Hi.
I'm going to read something, a couple of things first before I begin. Well, this is the beginning. Thich Nhat Hanh says, meditation is the marrow of Buddhist practice. The aim of meditation is to help the practitioner arrive at a deep understanding of reality. This insight has the capacity to liberate us from fear, anxiety, and melancholy. It can produce understanding and compassion, raise the quality of life, and bring freedom, peace, and joy to ourselves and to others around us. So, when I started thinking about giving a talk today, which I usually do at these all these sits, as some of you know, I somehow came up with the title of it, Stunningly Beautiful Terror, because Thich Nhat Hanh puts it so gently and so lovingly about what meditation brings us. But I also know that when I sit, and when a lot of people that I know sit, they face, it's terrifying. It's very terrifying to sit with the reality of life. So, I want to read one other thing. And I'll explain what this book is after I read this. It's called The Silence of God, Meditations on Prayer. It is always a case that when someone listens to you with genuine openness, you will find a voice to say what you have never been able to say before and did not know you could have said. Just reading that brings tears to my eyes. You can probably hear it in my voice. This is not simply having new words to say. It is rather an expanding and opening toward oneself. An awakening of the heart. This could be put in even stronger terms. It is not that sensitive listening will lead you to discover a new depth in yourself or to yourself. It will create a new depth. This is why listening, why speaking expectantly is creative. I am heard, therefore I am. I am who I am only because I have been heard. So this, when I was thinking about what to talk about today, I mean, the last 2 days have been just pretty unbelievable. I mean, you can see the pile of books here, right? I go to somebody else to find the words. So that you can all leave here saying, oh, wasn't that a great Dharma talk? Oh, wasn't that a great day? Blah, blah, blah. Sort of. But, so I was just looking around my bookshelves and I found this book that I took a course with this guy, James Karras. He's amazing. When I was, way back in the early 80s, when I was, before I actually consciously knew that my life was unraveling, but I was on a search, a spiritual search of some sort, and I went back to school and I took this philosophy of religion. In some way I was always looking for God. So I reread this book this weekend. I reread The Wisdom of No Escape by Pema Chodron. I meditated, I wrote, I took notes, I wrote down all these quotes and these things to say, and And then I thought, no, we'll just go for a walk. I'm not gonna say anything today. We'll just go take a nice nature walk and be done with it. And and the reason that makes me cry, what I just read to you, is because I trusted, thank you, Beth, I trusted that, or I know, my experience is such that I often don't know what's in my heart until I see it and hear it with a witness. And you are my witnesses today, so I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. But I do know, and the tears tell me this, that it will come from my heart. And that's a terrifying place to be in this, you know, in this way with somebody else, with other people, to really show yourself, to really reveal yourself in this way, or in any way. But I will refer to some of these notes because these people are brilliant. Unless we have someone to speak to, we cannot speak. And unless someone is listening, there is no one to whom we can speak. It is because our hearts find their voice that the present silence of God has become the silent present of God. I'll read that again later, but it's you know, one of my very first koans that I would sit with in my practice, and that I still would sit with, is who am I? Who am I? You know, and I'm still sitting with that, and I don't know who I am just by sitting, but I need to sit to even be able to ask the question. And I can know who I am with a sangha, be it one person or a group, who are also on the same quest, who also, as Pema Chodron says, are willing to take off their armor and reveal their heart. And so, and to sit with radical trust and to trust who you choose to do that with. And even if there's not trust, to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. To do it anyway. And that, because we can't rely, you know, it's everything, life, practice. Whatever we do is paradoxical. You know, as Buddha said, rely on yourself. But we can't just rely on ourselves. The other thing, that the theme that has been going around for me and what I wanted to talk about was the idea of I am you and you are me, right? And we are all together, as the Beatles would say. But, you know, they had a lot of things right. But the whole idea of interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh calls it, and how alike we are, and how non-separate we are, and it's that separateness that creates the terror that we think we are alone. And what also I'm thinking of in thinking about meditation and why it's so terrifying. A lot of people think the terror is about they're afraid they're going to lose themselves if they sit, right? But I think the real terror is that they're going to find themselves. And who is that? Who is that there? So for me, when when I'm not in balance, and when I'm not in my heart, living in my heart and through my heart and with my heart, in terror, I judge, I criticize, I look at other people and say, oh, that's not me, and that's not me, and that could never be me. And yet, if we can see all those things that we point to, those negative things, those horrible things that other people do and say within us, then we can have compassion not only for them but for ourselves. Michael told me of an acquaintance of his that recently shared about how her mother killed her father when she was 9 years old. Now, how does one ever get over something like that? How does one ever find in ourselves, especially as a 9-year-old, or ever, when you suffer that kind of trauma, compassion toward her mother? I don't have an answer to that. But we have less radical traumas in our life. We all have had some trauma of some sort, and we continually have trauma, and we continually have expectations of other people. And how do we sit with all of that? How do we behave when we're in the presence of another person? So Pema Chodron says, and I know I feel like I'm going all over the place, but that's how our mind works, right? That's how our mind works. That's how it is in Zazen. That's how it is in meditation practice. But it's all related. That's how it is with the world. Thank you. Self-improvement, which is what a lot of us do or look for when we come to the cushion, is a subtle aggression against who we are. Think about that for a second. Why is that? An aggression against who we are. Because, as she says, meditation practice is about befriending who we already are. Not changing ourselves, but becoming ourselves more deeply, with all our jealousy and sadness and anger and all of it. And she says, not being afraid to look, but be afraid to look. We are all afraid to look, and that's okay too. Be afraid, be really afraid, but don't let that stop you. She also has a great story in here that I'd like to read about heaven and hell, you know, the terror. A big burly samurai comes to the wise man and says, tell me the nature of heaven and hell. And the Roshi looks him in the face and says, why should I tell a scruffy, disgusting, miserable slob like you? The samurai starts to get purple in the face. His hair starts to stand up, but the Roshi won't stop. He keeps saying, a miserable worm like you, do you think I should tell you anything? Consumed by rage, the samurai draws his sword and he's just about to cut off the head of the Roshi. Then the Roshi says, that's hell. The samurai, who is in fact a sensitive person, instantly gets it, that he just created his own hell. He was deep in hell. It was black and hot, filled with hatred, self-protection, anger, and resentment. So much so that he was going to kill this man. Tears fill his eyes and he starts to cry, and he puts his palms together and the Roshi says, that's heaven. So, how many of us have been in that kind of hell? Whether it's to that extent where we want to kill somebody, or to that extent that we do harm to ourselves. I did harm to myself for years, not even knowing it. I was in hell. And I can go right back there. And it's always there. It's in me. It's not in what somebody says. It's not in what somebody does. It's in me. Without getting into the real abuse and political stuff that happens in the world, our sitting here today together helps mitigate and mollify and send whatever out to that kind of behavior. But it starts here, and it starts in our own, how we treat ourselves and how we treat the people around us and our noisy neighbors. I just want to read some of these other things that are just so beautiful from the reading that I did do this weekend. One more thing from this. I think I'm still looking for God. I actually gave God up when I was a teenager. And when I found this book by Thich Nhat Hanh about the energy of prayer, and he talks about God in this, this has like changed my whole outlook on God and embracing that. Not the way the Christian God perhaps that I grew up with, but God. Not being afraid to use that word. Not being afraid to God with a capital G, you know, like, oh my God. It's like, what is God? And how to be, you know, how to be a loving, compassionate human being as much as possible, even though I have all of that murderous rage inside of me and all of the anger and that comes with being human. So Karsh says, everything that constitutes us as persons can be found only in active and reciprocal social relations. Unless others reach out to me, unless others listen, I cannot be a person. At the same time, I must also reach out to others. I must be a listener myself. I cannot be a person unless the possibility is offered me by others. But those others are powerless to make me a person. I must ask for what they offer. I must beg them to listen. I think one of the reasons that I'm exploring this whole topic right now in my life is because of a relationship that I've had with somebody over the years that has changed at my behest. I feel I for whatever reason, and I'm still exploring this and sitting with this and trying to understand this, I no longer have the radical trust in this person that I once had to trust myself with, to trust me with, to get, to take my armor off in front of her. But I wonder, as I sit here and as I contemplate this and as I talk about this and think about this and as I have all weekend, if it is imperative for me to do that with this person, to really ask for what it is that I want from her. And I may not get it. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Another really interesting thing that, if I can find it, from this Kars guy, it is only in situations rich with surprise, only when life is filled with grace, that we can speak with each other meaningfully. So if we know what the other person is going to say, it's not genuine conversation. If we can be surprised, if we can be open and surprised, open to the surprise of what they will say, and sometimes maybe not like what they say, then it's genuine conversation. And I'm learning how to do that. And it's scary. It's scary to sit up here as, you know, the whatever I am in this group, to do the, you know, to give up a Dharma talk and start out by crying. To start out by, like, you know. And yet, meditation, and today, the sitting this morning helped me to take off some of the armor. And I don't have to be perfect. And I don't have to have this scripted talk that's seamless. That I can be me in front of you. And that's the only place I can be me, is in front of you. And as terrifying as it is, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it, just like our sitting practice, it takes all those things that our sitting practice takes. Mindfulness and diligence and effort and action and moment by moment, gentleness, awareness, rigorousness, all of it. When we start, you know, getting sloppy and lazy and, you know, on the cushion, we get sloppy and lazy in our life. And we take people for granted. And we finish their sentences for them. And we have expectations of what they're going to say to make us feel better. And it's only in the not knowing and the rich surprise of whatever that's going to bring, just like in our practice, that our heart opens even more and life opens even more and we become even more. So There's a quote in front of these books. They didn't say it, but someone did. A psychotic person is drowning in the very same things that a mystic swims in. Let me think about that for a minute, really. Another wonderful thing, now this is you know, a religious, a theologian, and this Carse fellow, and, you know, a God, a real Christian God kind of person, but he also talks a lot about community and Sangha here, and doesn't use the word Sangha, but he uses the word community, and what we lack and not what we possess constitutes the basis for community. I am closer to those with whom I share an unfulfilled dream than I am to those with whom I share a realized dream. Hmm. So a Sangha is, you know, a group of like-minded people who are in search of a shared dream, enlightenment perhaps, awakening, whatever that is, you know. I mean, if you think of all of the groups you've been a part of, that you've had a goal, if you shared a goal, even your, you know, your high school group community, your college community, any group in business that you've ever been in, you know, when you share that dream, and then once it's done, the community dissipates. Once that shared dream is done, the community just goes away. So, and that's why I think in a long-term relationship, it becomes very challenging to renew that dream and change that dream and keep it going together. Because otherwise, it gets stale. And once you realize a dream, like even getting married, you know, once we get what we want, we no longer want it. So we have to keep changing. We have to keep wanting. And not in the covetous, you know, craving way that creates suffering, but we have to keep that conversation going, listening, hearing your partner or whatever community is, maybe a community of two, to keep that goal, that shared goal, and then you become closer, and then you drift apart, and then you get another goal, and then you know having a child, you know, with in a family. That's a goal. You get that? Okay, then what's the next? What's the next? What's the next? Keep it. So that's my, you know, this is my challenge as a human being. Somehow I can't ever do any kind of talk or class or anything without reading something from the Tao Te Ching. I don't know what I want to read here, but I will pick something. I have a lot of favorites. I practically know this book by heart. If you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. If you want to take something, you must first allow it to be given. This is called the subtle perception of the way things are. The soft overcomes the hard. The slow overcomes the fast. Let your workings remain a mystery. Just show people the result. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. So,